Headlines on Press TV. Iran dismisses claims by Washington that it raised demands outside the JCPOA framework in the recent talks in Doha, saying Tehran is determined to reach a strong and lasting deal. The political crisis in the UK deepens as Prime Minister Boris Johnson refuses to step down despite a growing revolt against his leadership. Also ahead, a 20-year-old Palestinian man becomes the latest victim of Israeli gunfire in the occupied West Bank. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran is determined to reach a good, strong and lasting agreement on the revival of the 2015 deal. Hossein Amir Abdollahian says such agreement must guarantee the interests of the Islamic Republic. He made the comments in a press briefing with his Qatari counterpart Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani in Tehran. The Iranian minister also touched upon recent indirect talks between Iran and the United States in the Qatari capital over the revival of the JCPOA. Amir Abdollahian said Iran has not proposed any demands beyond the deal. The top diplomat said that in the talks in Doha, Tehran made it clear that the US must provide assurances that Iran will be able to reap full economic benefits of a revived deal. Iran remains adamant that the restoration of the deal hinges on the verifiable removal of the US sanctions. Political commentator Robert Fantina says the United States' unrealistic demands have been the main obstacles of the reviving for the 2015 deal.
The United States will not make any changes. The United States is, as it has been from the start of the talks to rejuvenate the JCPOA, has been unrealistic in its demands. The United States violated the agreement, therefore it must unilaterally re-enter the agreement. There is no reason for any discussions. Iran does not have to make any further concessions. The United States violated the agreement, which was a violation of international law, and the United States needs to come back into it. That President Joe Biden is not willing to do so indicates that the U.S. is not serious about the agreement and has no real interest in maintaining it. It will only do so if it brings it to its knees, which has not happened since Trump pulled out in 2018, and is not going to happen. So the United States is causing this stalemate, and it is the United States that can release it and start constructive talks by being realistic once again.
Iran has voiced its support for security and stability in Uzbekistan following a deadly unrest in the Central Asian country. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, in a phone call with his Uzbek counterpart, denounced as unacceptable any moves that damages Uzbekistan's unity. Last week, the country's autonomous Karakalpakstan region was the scene of protests against planned constitutional reforms. Following the protests, President Shavkat Mirziyoyev withdrew from his plans to amend articles on the region's status. Analysts believe the developments in Uzbekistan are the continuation of tensions heightened in the Central Asian region by the current U.S. administration under President Joe Biden. Observers view the protesters in Kazakhstan, tensions between Tajikistan and Afghanistan, as well as the ouster of Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan, as part of Washington's new project to create chaos in Russia's backyard and counter China's Silk Road project. A wave of resignations and chain of scandals have sent the British government into a tailspin. Boris Johnson, however, says he will carry on despite growing calls to quit his post.
It's exactly when times are tough and when the country faces pressures on the economy and pressures on their budgets, Mr. Speaker. And when we have the biggest war in Europe for 80 years, Mr. Speaker, that is exactly the moment that you'd expect a government to continue with its work, not to walk away, Mr. Speaker, and to get on with our job and to focus on the things that matter to the people of this country.
Johnson was speaking during weekly question time debate in Parliament. He said he would resign only if he feels it's impossible for the government to go ahead. On Tuesday, Britain's finance minister and health secretary quit their jobs. The duo said they could no longer tolerate the culture of scandal surrounding Johnson's tenure. Their departure was followed by resignations from more than a dozen junior ministers and aides. Meanwhile, the leader of the opposition party made a blistering attack on Johnson during the parliament question time.
Anyone quitting now after defending all that, hasn't got a shred of integrity. Mr. Speaker, isn't this the first recorded case of the sinking ships fleeing the rat?
Starmer said the government is showing signs of collapse given the wave of scandals and resignations. He also pointed the finger at Johnson for appointing Chris Pincher as the Conservative deputy chief. Pincher resigned last week after being accused of sexual misconduct. The recent dilemma comes hot on the heels of the Premier's narrow escape from a no-confidence vote. The British Prime Minister has failed to put a saga of scandals behind in recent months. He has been under tense pressure for holding parties at No. 10 Downing Street during COVID lockdowns. Our London correspondent Robert Carter joined us with the latest on the resignation of ministers and challenges ahead of Prime Minister Johnson. Let's take a listen.
There's no doubt about it. This news is absolutely devastating for the embattled Prime Minister. This concept of, is he the right man for the job? Will he still be in his position going forward for much longer? This has plagued him for months now, even before the no confidence vote against him last month, which took place, where 148 of his own party members, his own MPs, voted against him in that motion. However, these are very senior resignations, very important key members of his cabinet, including the Treasury chief, who has resigned during a cost of living crisis. How Boris Johnson is going to navigate that at this time, we'll have to wait and see. But certainly the question of whether he can survive this latest round of resignations will have to be seen. There are actually pundits in British media circles now that are actually basically throwing in the towel for the Prime Minister, suggesting that he should probably consider going soon. I even saw on, I think it was Talk TV, there was a pundit close to the Conservative Party who suggested that he'd be surprised to see the Prime Minister last longer than, say, this weekend.
In other news, the European Union censors a proposed piece of legislation that allows Britain to change the Northern Ireland Protocol, which was part of the agreement on its withdrawal from the Union in 2020. European Commissioner Marfo Sefcovic says there is a, quote, no legal or political justification whatsoever for the UK to unilaterally change an international pact. The remarks made by the bloc's post-Brexit negotiator comes as Britain has introduced a draft bill that allows it to scrap some of the rules on post-Brexit trade with the Northern Ireland. The draft bill could take a year or more to pass in Parliament. The Union has warned that Britain's unilateral actions could lead to instability. A Tunisian judge summons the former speaker of the country's dissolved Parliament as political crisis deepens in the Arab nation. Rachid Ghannouchi has been summoned to stand before an investigative judge over money laundering allegations. His party says the accusations are untrue and a result of distortion and fabrication. Earlier, the politician got his bank accounts frozen for supporting, quote, terrorism. President Kais Saied's opponents have described the move as an attempt to silence his dissidents. The president has been ruling by decree after the toppled parliament and dismissed the prime minister last year. He is now pushing for a new constitution he proposed earlier. The opposition says new laws will drag the country back into dictatorship. One more Palestinian falls victim to Israeli gunfire as the regime's forces intensify crackdowns in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Health Ministry says 20-year-old Rafiq Riaz Ghanam was shot during an Israeli raid on a village south of the city of Jenin. The victim was standing in front of his home when targeted and then detained along with other youth. Ghanam later succumbed to his injuries. Israeli forces carry out deadly raids in the occupied territories on an almost daily basis. The flashpoint city of Jenin has become a center of resistance in the wake of repeated attacks by Israeli settlers and forces there. Earlier, our correspondent Mona Kandil gave us more details on the latest deadly Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin.
I have to mention that the Israeli military declared that one of the main reasons for raiding Jenin is to arrest a well-known wanted Palestinian fighter. His name is Amid Ersan. He was a former Palestinian prisoner, and when he was released by the Israeli forces, he was wanted, and the Israeli military was also chasing him. They arrested him this morning, Amid Ersan, 24 years old, from Jenin. Not only this, what happened this morning, today we are speaking about over 40 Palestinians were detained, not only in Jenin, 30 of them were arrested by the Israeli forces in Silwad. And we have to say that Silwad, in the last few weeks, we have been witnessing the clashes and more, let's say, anti-Israel operations being carried out by Palestinians also originally from Silwad. So the main aim for the Israeli military today is to continue raiding the areas where the homeland of Palestinians who carried out anti-Israel operations or are engaged in the different forms of resistance, like Jenin and Silwad today.
The UK has finally decided to extradite WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the US to face trial on publishing classified military documents despite criticism. There is one world leader that came out in his defense, is Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. He says if Assange is extradited and charged in the US, then the Statue of Liberty, which stands for freedom, should be dismantled.
The Mexican president has criticized the United States over the possible extradition of WikiLeaks whistleblower to Washington. Andrés Manuel López Obrador has suggested that Statue of Liberty be taken down if Julian Assange is sent from Britain to the U.S. Obrador said at a press conference that the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor in New York City in the United States ought to be dismantled if a U.S. court indicts Assange. If he is brought to the U.S. and sentenced to the maximum penalty, to death in prison, it will be necessary to start a campaign to dismantle the Statue of Liberty in New York, donated by the French, because it will no longer be a symbol of freedom.
You can't go around, as the United States does, proclaiming yourself the judge of freedom and democracy and the representative of freedom and democracy, and, you know, be giving awards around the world for freedom of press and freedom of speech when you're engaged in the most dangerous prosecution of a journalist in modern era.
The Mexican president, who is scheduled to visit the United States for talks with U.S. President Joe Biden in Washington next week, said he would bring up the issue of Assange's extradition in the meeting with his American counterpart. In January 2022, López Obrador said that he would be willing to offer political asylum in Mexico to Assange.
I mean, you know, this is a terrible, dangerous action that the United States has taken against Julian Assange. This is a guy who's published the same things that the New York Times, in cooperation with the New York Times and the Washington Post, and the Guardian and the major papers around the world, he did nothing different than they did. He got information from a source, which was true, and he published it. And it's so dangerous. Now he's been in custody for 10 years.
López Obrador was invited to Washington after announcing that he was not going to participate in the America's Summit organized by the Biden government at the beginning of last month in protest over the fact that Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela, Miguel Díaz-Canel of Cuba, and Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua were not invited.
The Mexican president's stance on Assange is shared by Assange supporters. They feel Assange should not be prosecuted since he exposed U.S. crimes during his war in Afghanistan and Iraq. Obrador and Assange's supporters feel that his prosecution is politically motivated and an assault on journalism and free speech. There are many more who also believe that U.S. authorities should actually be put on trial for atrocities committed by American forces.
The U.S. government has filed criminal charges against Assange for publishing about 750,000 classified military and diplomatic documents related to the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Washington claims releasing vast troves of confidential U.S. military records and diplomatic cables has put American agents' lives in danger. Since the beginning of his political activism, Assange has been praised as an anti-establishment hero who has exposed U.S. atrocities in conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq.
So, the United States is exerting extraterritorial jurisdiction over journalists who tell the truth that is embarrassing to the United States. And they want to bring him here and put him in jail for 175 years.
Supporters of Assange accused the United States and Britain of victimizing him and decried the criminal charges as a politically motivated attack on journalism and free speech. Australian-born Assange has lodged an appeal with the United Kingdom's High Court against his extradition to the United States.
Every journalist around the world, since the day Julian Assange was arrested, is looking over their shoulder and thinking twice about whether they're going to publish truthful information that will the United States will object to. Precisely the reason the United States is doing this is to scare journalists. And I don't doubt for a second that it has.
Assange, who is wanted by U.S. authorities on 18 counts, will be extradited within 28 days if his appeal is rejected by the High Court. Assange had spent 7 years at the Ecuadorian embassy in London before his arrest by UK Metropolitan Police in April after the Ecuadorian government cancelled his asylum.
Well, that's a wrap on World News.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the Limelight.
In the United States, former President Donald Trump has weathered scandals by keeping his intentions under wraps. But recent testimony paints a stark portrait of a man willing to do almost anything to hang on to power. The news analysis you're about to hear has been written by the chief White House correspondent of the New York Times, Peter Baker. The piece is titled, New Insights into Trump's State of Mind on January 6th Chip Away at Doubts. He was not speaking metaphorically. It was not an offhand comment. President Donald Trump had every intention of joining a mob of supporters he knew to be armed and dangerous as it marched to the Capitol building in Washington. And there had even been talk of marching into the House chamber himself to disrupt Congress from ratifying his election defeat. For a year and a half, Donald Trump has been shielded by obfuscations and mischaracterizations, benefiting from uncertainty about what he was thinking on 6th of January 2021. If he truly believed the election had been stolen, if he genuinely expected the gathering at the Capitol would be a peaceful protest, the argument went, then could he be held accountable, much less indicted, for the mayhem that ensued? But for a man who famously avoids leaving emails or other trails of evidence of his unspoken motives, any doubts about what was really going through Mr. Trump's mind on that day of violence seem to have been eviscerated by testimony presented in recent weeks by the House committee investigating the Capitol attack, especially the dramatic appearance last week of a 26-year-old former White House aide who offered a chilling portrait of a president willing to do almost anything to hang on to power. More than perhaps any insider account that has emerged, the recollections of the aide, Cassidy Hutchinson, demolished the fiction of a president who had nothing to do with what happened. Each revelation was stunning on its own. Donald Trump knew what weapons were in the crowd as he exhorted supporters to fight like hell and even tried to stop anyone from disarming his supporters. He was so determined to join the mob at the Capitol that he lashed out at his Secret Service detail for refusing to take him. And he was so nonchalant about the bedlam he had unleashed that he suggested Vice President Mike Pence might deserve to be executed for refusing to overturn the election. But when added together, the various disclosures have produced the clearest picture yet of an unprecedented attempt to subvert the traditional American democratic process, with a sitting president who had lost at the ballot box planning to march with an armed crowd to the Capitol to block the transfer of power, brushing aside manifold concerns about the potential for violence along the way. The innocent explanations for Donald Trump's conduct seem virtually impossible to credit following the testimony we have seen, said Joshua Matz, who served as a lawyer for House Democrats during both of Mr. Trump's impeachment trials in the Senate. At the very least, they powerfully shift the burden to Trump and his defenders to offer evidence that he did not act with a corrupt, criminal state of mind. And so nearly 2.5 centuries after the 13 American colonies declared independence from an unelected king, the nation is left weighing a somber new view of the fragility of its democracy and the question of what, if anything, could and should be done about it. To the extent that there may be a turning point in that debate, Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony proved decisive for some who had been willing to give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt or had been uncertain that the committee had gathered enough evidence about the former president's state of mind. Solomon Weisenberg, a former deputy independent counsel under Ken Starr, called her account the smoking gun, making a case for his criminal culpability on seditious conspiracy charges. Mick Mulvaney, who served as Donald Trump's third White House chief of staff, said he had been defending him, but learning that Mr. Trump knew some in the crowd were armed and still encouraged it to go to the Capitol certainly changes my mind, he told Fox News Channel. David French, a conservative critic of Donald Trump, had been skeptical the committee would produce sufficient evidence, but Cassidy Hutchinson's sworn testimony closes a gap in the criminal case against Donald Trump, he wrote on The Dispatch, a conservative website. Two law professors, Alan Rosenstein of the University of Minnesota and Jed Handelsman Sugarman of Fordham University, likewise opposed prosecution until seeing Ms. Hutchinson writing on the Lawfare blog that she changed their minds because she provided proof of intent. The hearings, which will continue after Congress returns on 11th of July from its holiday recess, have presented only the prosecution's side of the story. With Donald Trump's acquiescence, Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, the House Republican leader, opted against appointing anyone to the Select Committee after Speaker Nancy Pelosi rejected a couple of his original selections, leaving the panel composed entirely of Democrats and just two Republicans deeply critical of the former president. Neither Cassidy Hutchinson nor any of the other witnesses who have testified have been cross-examined. Their testimony has often been presented in short edited clips rather than in their entirety, and no contrary testimony has been offered publicly. In a courtroom, if it ever came to that, the case against Donald Trump would be tested, as it has not been so far. The committee's presentation has been a purely political exercise, deceptively edited, said Jason Miller, who served as a political advisor to Donald Trump during and after the election. Yet even outside the confines of the hearing room, Mr. Miller and others in Donald Trump's camp have mainly attacked the committee or tried to chip away at pieces of the testimony rather than produce much of a defense of the former president's actions or an alternate explanation of his state of mind. In his social media posts, Donald Trump denied asking the armed supporters to be allowed at his rally. Who would ever want that, he wrote, not me. He focused more on his energy on castigating Cassidy Hutchinson in scathing personal terms and concentrated on one small aspect of her testimony, namely whether he lunged at the wheel of his presidential vehicle when his Secret Service detail refused to take him to the Capitol on 6th of January 2021. Throughout his time in politics, Donald Trump has survived one scandal after another, in part because people in the authority felt unable to read his mind. Investigators were not sure they could definitively prove that he intended to break the law when he authorized hush money to silence a film actress, or when he provided false valuations of his properties to lenders, or when he sought to impede the inquiry into Russia's election interference. Fact-checkers similarly documented tens of thousands of false statements he made while in office, but were reluctant to declare that he knowingly lied. He learned from Dad, Norman Vincent Peale, and especially Roy Cohn, that you can get away with almost anything if you never back down and insist long enough and loud enough that you're right. And he held onto that right up to the final ride. Back to the White House, said Gwenda Blair, his biographer, referring in turn to Fred Trump, the author of The Power of Positive Thinking, and Senator Joseph McCarthy's red-baiting chief counsel, who became a mentor to Donald Trump. For Mr. Trump, he was being completely consistent with the way he was acted his entire life. Anthony Scaramucci, a longtime associate who served briefly in the White House before breaking with Donald Trump, has talked in the past about Mr. Trump's power to interpret reality in whatever way suited him. But Mr. Scaramucci said He had concluded that Mr. Trump understood perfectly well that the election was not stolen and that his actions on 6th of January 2021 to overturn it were illegitimate. "I do believe that President Trump knows that the whole thing that he is doing is a ruse," said Mr. Scaramucci. "On more than one occasion throughout the campaign in 2016, he would turn to me and others and say funny things like, 'Why can't people realize what you guys realize about me? That I'm play-acting and full of it at least 50% of the time.' That sort of joking. So he knows that this is all a lie." What the hearings have demonstrated, with an array of witnesses drawn almost entirely from the president's own allies and advisers, is that if Donald Trump did not know, he certainly had every reason to. One advisor after another, including two successive attorney generals and multiple campaign officials and lawyers, told him there was no there, as one put it, when it came to widespread election fraud. Yet he persisted in spinning wild tales of conspiracies. While Attorney General Merrick Garland must weigh many factors before deciding whether to bring a case, including whether it is in the national interest to charge a former president, Cassidy Hutchinson's account of Donald Trump's actions leading up to and on 6th of January provided the building blocks for a possible prosecution by demonstrating that he and his advisers understood perfectly well they were playing with fire. While Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, claimed in a memoir that Donald Trump had only been speaking metaphorically when he vowed to march to the Capitol. In fact, he had discussed it for days. Cassidy Hutchinson first learned of the plan on 2nd of January 2021, when Rudolph Giuliani, the president's personal attorney, told her Mr. Trump would go to the Capitol and would look powerful. Alarmed, she found Mark Meadows, her boss. "It sounds like we're going to the Capitol," she said. Mr. Meadows did not look up from his phone, but made clear he understood the peril. "Things might get real, real bad on 6th of January," she remembered him telling her. On the morning of 6th of January, she listened as Mark Meadows was warned that some Trump supporters gathering at the rally on the Ellipse had weapons with them. Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, warned that Donald Trump should not go to the Capitol. "We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we make that movement happen," he said, according to Cassidy Hutchinson. Donald Trump was undaunted, though. Waiting in a tent to address the crowd, he brushed off worries about violence. He criticized the Secret Service for screening supporters with magnetometers, standard procedure for a presidential event, and demanded that they be removed. "They're not here to hurt me," he said. "Take the mags away. Let my people in." Addressing the crowd, he declared that he would go with them to the Capitol. But when he climbed into his armored vehicle, the Secret Service officials refused to take him, citing his own security. According to what Ms. Hutchinson said, she was later told by Anthony Ornato, a deputy White House chief of staff, that Mr. Trump erupted in rage and demanded to go to the Capitol. They returned to the White House instead, where Donald Trump stewed about being thwarted. And he watched television images of his supporters rampaging through the Capitol. He agreed with those in the crowd calling on Mike Pence to be hanged. Indeed, according to Ms. Hutchinson's testimony, he was on the side of the mob. As she heard Mark Meadows put it, "He doesn't think they're doing anything wrong."
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And we are currently taking our inspiration from the 16th sermon where Imam Ali alayhi salam explains some of the strategies that he has in mind with regards to the Islamic community. And we realize that his very powerful and deep insight with regards to the events of the past and how they reflect themselves in the present day and age and their relevance. And this gives him that very strength in able to provide that right, strategy, and that analytical expertise that he had with regards to the present day issues that, you know, made him understand what exactly the community is facing. So as there are people who might know very well about the stories of the past, but they are very, very weak in understanding and analyzing the present day situation. And a person who needs to guide the society needs to have both, to be able to know the past and to analyze today's day and age and see the relevance between the two and show the path ahead. And this was what Imam Ali alayhi salam was trying to do.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. And we are talking about how Imam Ali alayhi salam was trying to apply a strategy in the society. And we saw that Imam Ali alayhi salam had analyzed the community very well. And he saw that the same difficulties and problems that the community faced at the time when the Prophet had come, when the community was still in the age of ignorance, that same ignorance has returned back. إِنَّ بَلِيَّتَكُمْ قَدْ عَادَتْ كَهَيْئَتِهَا يَوْمَ بَعَثَ اللَّهُ نَبِيَّهُ. The same difficulties, the same problems, the same sicknesses have come back. It was as if Imam Ali alayhi salam was saying, O people, O feeble-minded, weak-hearted people. I mean, this is a sad reality. It's not that Imam Ali is trying to degrade these people. It's just they had become like that. You today, as if Imam Ali alayhi salam is saying, you today are happy that the mosque of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has been expanded and that people are praying there and there are large numbers of people coming to pray and that, people are reciting Quran and they are doing various acts of worship inside that mosque and you are happy with that. Or he's addressing that army general at that time and saying, Oh, army general, You are only pleased with the fact that the Muslim lands have increased in number and might. You feel that you have been able to, you know, take your army to another corner of the world, and you have been able to engulf another piece of land with your authority. And that makes you happy. And you think that that is what Islam is. And that is the progress of the Muslim land and the Muslim society. Or, O Muslim leader, you are pleased that the Muslim society is acting upon the apparent acts of worship of Islam, the apparent orders like the prayers, the tax, the khums, the zakat. And you feel that, the Muslim society is progressing and it is doing a good job. But, O Muslim leader, O Muslim governor, O general, O army general, O people, that is not it. That is not what Islam wants. Because I, as Ali, alayhi salam, am telling you that you people are facing the same sickness that you faced when the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam came to you.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. Now, it is a kind of a dilemma in our minds that is it possible that a Muslim society is observing all the apparent necessities of Islam, you know, and yet be in the very starting point that they were in when the Prophet came? Like, are they back to square one, despite the fact that they are doing all of these apparent glamorous and maybe, you know, extravagant acts of worship and acts of apparent devotion? Is that enough? Imam Ali alayhi salam saying, no, you are back to square one, O people. You have returned back to that area, to that particular position that you are in. What was there at the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam? What was the problem with the community? What was the sickness at that time when he just came? There were some rebellious and tyrannical people who were controlling others and not allowing them to progress. There were dictatorial rulers. There was a vast gap between the rich and the poor. Some were being enslaved while others were enjoying riches that could not be imagined. People were in ignorance, compound ignorance. That means they didn't even know that they don't know. People were stuck in difficulties and problems. Yet at that time, the people were not aware. They did not know that they are sick. They did not know that they have problems. In fact, they thought that they are progressing. That very problem today, O Muslims, you have. Imam Ali alayhi salam is saying that if that time you had tyrannical rulers, today also you have tyrannical rulers. If at that time there was ignorance, today also we see the same ignorance. Why not when today a Jew, one of the bad Jews, no, of course there's good Jews and bad Jews, one of the bad Jews has become one of your scholars and he's judging and deciding between you. What has happened to your community? Ka'ab al-Ahbar, which is a famous scholar at the time. That means it shows that you have gone back to that ignorant state. And that is the danger that we are facing. And that is what we need to avoid. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The latest report from Brazil's National Institute for Space Research showed that the Brazilian Amazon has lost 1,450 square miles of jungle since the start of 2022. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading Activists Fear Tipping Point of No Return as Fires in Amazon Rainforest Surge. Stay tuned for more. The Brazilian government has published a report showing that more than 2,500 fire hotspots were recorded in the Amazon rainforest last month, the highest number for June since 2007, one of the worst years ever for the critical ecosystem. The latest report from Brazil's National Institute for Space Research showed that the Brazilian Amazon has lost 1,450 square miles of jungle since the start of 2022. Greenpeace Brazil said in response to the alarming figures that the far-right Bolsonaro government's systematic rampage against basic environmental protections is responsible for the surge in rainforest fires and overall deforestation, which have helped transform parts of the Amazon, long known as a key carbon sink, into sources of planet-warming greenhouse gas. Agribusiness is hitting new records for forest destruction as the dry season arrives in the Amazon, said Christian Mazzetti, spokesperson for Greenpeace Brazil, adding, illegal burnings and deforestation have accelerated over the last 3 years as a direct result of the Brazilian government's anti-environmental agenda that encourages the destruction of the forest. Mazzetti added, if this trend does not change, we will approach the tipping point of no return in which the Amazon could fail as a rainforest. Brazilian academics have warned in recent months that a Bolsonaro victory in the October presidential election would mean total demise for the Brazilian Amazon. Recent polling shows that Bolsonaro is trailing leftist former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who has vowed to pursue net zero deforestation if elected. If Bolsonaro remains in the power of presidency, it's hopeless in terms of the environment, Marcio Astorini, executive secretary of the Sao Paulo-based Climate Observatory, told HuffPost in April, a record-shattering month of Amazon deforestation. Astorini said there will be more deforestation. The Amazon will fast forward to its collapse point. Environmental groups have voiced dismay at the Biden administration's failure to confront Bolsonaro on the international stage over his government's assault on the Amazon. The U.S. is Brazil's second-largest trading partner. Last month, during the U.S.-hosted Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles, President Biden went as far as to praise Bolsonaro for trying to protect the Amazon. In addition to being divorced from reality, Biden's statement is remarkably tone-deaf. Maria Laura Canio and Luciana Teles Chavez of Human Rights Watch wrote on the final day of the summit where the two leaders met for the first time, Biden has shamefully squandered the opportunity to leverage his meeting with Bolsonaro to support the courageous defenders of the Amazon. These defenders are putting their lives on the line to protect the world's largest rainforest and a vital bulwark against climate change. They continued. Biden should correct this mistake and press Bolsonaro to reverse his damaging policies, urging Bolsonaro to get Brazil back on track in fighting deforestation and protecting forest defenders from violence. Diana Ruiz, the head of forests at Greenpeace USA, said in a statement that up to now, the Biden administration has only legitimized the Brazilian government's anti-indigenous and anti-environmental agenda. Ruiz added, the U.S. has a responsibility to act and stop making deals with President Bolsonaro, who continues to wage an assault against indigenous peoples and environmental defenders.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a heralder of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very important hadith and narration which has been narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about how the goodness and the good of this world and the hereafter, khayr ad-dunya wal akhirah, khayr, goodness, is obtained, how these are obtained. You know, khayr and goodness, this is a very general concept. It's one of the most general concepts, ethical concepts, goodness versus evil, and to which all other, you know, ethical concepts are weighed, right? In this tradition, Imam Ali, it kind of elaborates on how this goodness is obtained. How do we get it? He says, there are three things which, if one possesses, they have been endowed with the good of this world and the hereafter. Three things. They are the following. Contentment with Allah's decree. Ar-ridha bil-qadha. Being content with Allah's decree and what He's destined and written down for us. Of course, this doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we should not work hard and strive and make efforts for success in this world and the hereafter. But it means that once we have performed and done our most to progress and to succeed in this life and in the hereafter, you know, we should leave the effects to God and also be content with what happens and occurs following our efforts. The second is patience in the face of tribulation. Wasabru alal bala, being patient in the face of problems and tribulations and calamities. This also goes back to the first thing. If we're content with Allah's decree, a part of that is the tribulations that we will face. So we will be patient in the face of those calamities and tribulations. The last thing and the third thing that the Imam mentions as the cause of the acquisition of goodness in the hereafter and in this world is the following. And thankfulness in times of ease. وَالتَّشَكُّرْ فِي الرَّخَى وَالتَّشَكُّرْ Firraha, meaning being thankful in times of ease, right? Of course, this might be a lower form of goodness, because we also have some other hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, in which he says, we in reference to the family of the Prophet, are thankful to God both in the face of tribulations and in the face of ease. Right, so maybe this is like a lower form of goodness that the Imam is referring to. In any case, this is still a cause of the acquisition of goodness in the hereafter and in this world. In a similar tradition, Imam Ali alayhi salam has also kind of summed up this hadith in a general terms. He said, Allah, glory be to Him, does not give His servant any good of this world or in the hereafter, except as a result of His good nature and good intention. Kind of sums up those three things in one good quality. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the good of this world and the hereafter and its obtainment in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay, this one lay, this one lay.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.